Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new podcast interview for the New Books in East Asian Studies channel, which is part of the New Books network. I'm your host, Roman Paszka, and today we will be talking to Clinton Goddard, who is the author of Darwin, Dharma, and the Divine, Evolutionary Theory and Religion in Modern Japan, which was published in 2017 by the University of Hawaii Press. Thank you, Clinton. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start this with, why don't you tell a little bit about yourself, about your career, about your research? How did you become involved in this field?
Okay. Well, I grew up in Holland and actually crossed the border every day to go to school in Belgium. And I gradually got interested in philosophy. And I went to study philosophy at the University of Leuven. And that was a very good education, but the education was focused only exclusively on Western philosophy. And after a while, that bothered me a little bit. I thought, well, what about the rest? What about Buddhism? What about Confucianism? And that led me gradually to study more about those schools of thought. And I got an opportunity to study a year abroad in Osaka. And that really got the ball rolling and eventually brought me where I am today.
Okay. And to move on to the main topic of our discussion, which is your book. So how did you get the idea for the book? How did you start working on Darwin, the Dharma, as you call it, and the divine? How was the book born?
Okay, so I went for graduate school to University of Chicago. And what I wanted to initially do is look at how 19th century, early 20th century Buddhists, so Buddhists in the Meiji period, how they engaged with Western philosophy and modern categories of thought. That's what I initially thought I was going to do. So looking at people like Inoue Annio, for example. And when I started reading more and more of these Meiji Buddhist texts, I start to notice that a lot of them talked a lot about science and especially about the theory of evolution. And I took one course on the history of science. I didn't know anything of the history of science, and wrote a short paper on how Buddhists dealt with the theory of evolution. And the instructor at the time said, well, okay, this is fun, but you don't know anything about evolutionary theory. So why don't you go over to the Department of History Science and take some courses with Bob Richards, who is an expert on Darwin. And so, which I did, and started reading Darwin, started reading a lot of evolutionary theory, history of evolutionary theory, history of science. And that gradually really changed my view and what kind of project I wanted to do. It dawned on me that, the issue of, or the debates on, religion and science is such a huge problem, but it's utterly dominated by debates in the West and issues about Christianity or science versus Christianity versus evolution or creationism versus evolution. And again, I was thinking, well, what happened in Japan then? And it's not surprising, but evolutionary theory is a bit the kind of master science of the 19th century, if you will. So if you look, it pops up everywhere, right? And that's when I thought, well, I'm going to... First, my initial idea was I'm going to write the book on everything on evolutionary theory in Japan. But that, was a little bit too much to take on. So I got back to my original interest and figured, let's try and tell the story of how religious figures dealt with the theory of evolution. What were their views? What were their perceptions? How did they deal with this issue?
Okay. And what about the, if you could tell us a little bit more about the structure of the book, the parts, the chapters, the sections of the book?
Okay. So the book combines it's relatively traditional, I would say. It combines a chronological and thematic structure. So it starts with the early transmission of evolutionary theory in Meiji Japan. So the early introducers, people like Edward Morse and Ernest Fenollosa. And then it then moves to the later Meiji period with the reception of evolutionary theory among Shinto figures, the emergence of Kokutai ideology. Then I have a whole chapter. Chapter 3 is about the Buddhists. The Buddhists do play a big role in this book. The Buddhist reception of evolutionary theory. And then chapter 4, 5, and 6 are about the 20th century. And it shifts track a little bit. In chapter 4, I go into also some of the socialists. So the socialists looked at evolutionary theory, the issue of vitalism. And then chapter 5 is, I think chapter 5, that is a key chapter. It deals with a kind of backlash against evolutionary theory in the 1930s and 1940s. In this, a whole range of people appear, philosophers, again, Buddhists, but also Christians, ideologues. And that was a bit of a, before I started out on this project, I didn't really realize the extent of the backlash against evolutionary theory in the 1930s and 40s. The last chapter, chapter 6, is about the post-war period deals with a major figure called Imanishi Kinji, very famous biologist in the post-war period. And some of the pre-war intellectual legacies that still resonate in his thinking. That's the structure of the book, I think.
You mentioned Buddhism, you mentioned Christianity, Shintoism, and so on and so forth. And my question would be, so you talk about the roles that they played in this debate around evolutionary theory in Japan. And how would you sum up their respective attitudes or tenets? For example, Buddhist thinkers, what did they have to say about evolutionary theory or
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think one thing I wanted to, before I answer the question, one thing I wanted to emphasize in the book is that you really have to see the reaction of, for example, Meiji Buddhists to evolutionary thinking, not just in terms of how a certain Buddhist looks at the theory of evolution, but how he understood it in combination with their dialogue with Christians, with Christianity, with other ideas circulating, such as Confucianism, and all that happening in a really rapidly changing intellectual and then also a changing political landscape. So one thing I really wanted to emphasize is it's not just about Buddhists dealing with evolution or Christians, but how they interacted with each other while dealing with this problem. So in the first chapter, for example, it became pretty clear to me that if you look at the, let's say, for example, the 1880s, you have these young Buddhist intellectuals like Ino Enyo, who write very, very positively about evolution, saying, making essentially this rhetorical move that, well, evolution, the latest evolutionary theories confirm what Buddhism has always said. Buddhism is very scientific. But they do this also in response to and in competition with other Christian evolutionary theorists. Who kind of say the same thing about Christianity. Well, they bring the message to Japan and they say, well, Japanese, if you want to modernize, if you want to become a strong nation and you want to import and understand modern science, you need the kind of underlying software, if you will, to do that, which is Christianity. And then the Buddhists in return, they say, well, no, it's the modern Western nations are modern despite of Christianity. So there's a competition going on between the two young Buddhist and Christian intellectuals who kind of stimulate each other to embrace evolutionary theory even more. So now, having said that, I do think overall speaking, the Buddhists were relatively enthusiastic about evolutionary theory. They did have their issues with elements of evolutionary theory, such as reductionism or materialism or the idea of the struggle of survival. That was an idea that was actually very unpopular in Japan, I think. But overall, they were quite positive about the theory of evolution, I would say. Christians was a mixed bag. The early missionaries who came to Japan, some of them preached that evolutionary theory was really wrong. Some of the Christians, this is also funny, some of the Christians who are missionaries who are teaching at the University of Tokyo told the students, well, there's this guy called Darwin. Don't read his books. Right? And some of the biologists taking their classes, you know, they were young guys, right? The first thing they do is they go and buy Darwin, right? And then they really like it. On the other hand, you have missionaries in the Kansai area. At the same time, people like Thomas Gulick were really bring in this vision of that Christianity and evolutionary theory are really two schools of thought that do not that actually reinforce each other. Perhaps the most negative responses towards evolution come much later, but they come from more nationalist Shinto-inspired ideologues in the 1930s, right? That's those are the most negative. But I wouldn't say they're representative of Shinto, right? that would be too much of a stretch to go. But that would be my summary about the different schools.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor's the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Okay, and along the same lines, I have a question about the conclusion. Conclusions chapter to your book, where you express your hope that your book has made it clear that there are two myths that should be laid to rest. And the two myths that you talk about are the first one, that evolutionary theory was uncontroversial among religious thinkers. And then the second one, that evolutionary theory was interpreted predominantly as a politically conservative theory in support of state ideology. I'm quoting from your book, of course. If you could give us more details about these two myths and precisely what your book made clear in this respect.
Okay. So this statement comes mainly from what I've seen in the English, but also Japanese secondary literature at the time that I was researching the book, right? And it was quite common to see. Let's take the political the second aspect. It was quite common to see people saying that, you know, social Darwinism or Darwinism was really a theory that was largely used in support of an authoritarian state, or in combination with eugenics, like later on, really in support of the military expansionism, a whole range of things that, you know, tend to have less positive connotations, right? But when I started researching, I realized that it really wasn't the case. If you take the Meiji period, it's only a couple of figures who positively combine evolutionary theory with an authoritarian state, such as, for example, Kato Hiroyuki. But then everybody criticizes Kato Hiroyuki, right? And then conversely, I think if you look in the 20th century, evolutionary theory was really strongly embraced by the early socialists and then by the anarchists, who were very unsurprisingly critical of the modern Japanese state, of cutthroat capitalism, and so on. And then in the 1930s, as I already mentioned, there's a strong backlash against evolutionary theory, which is interestingly, there's quite a bit of an overlap with some of the left-wing embraces of evolutionary theory. So some ideologues, such as, for example, Kihira Tadayoshi, who's a professor, has quite a powerful, influential position. They would say, well, evolutionary theory is really, it's a Western theory. B, it's a theory based on 19th century capitalism. it's based on Western individualism. And at the same time, it's a theory that is used by socialists and anarchists to talk about the struggle between classes, for example. So it's a theory that both supports Western liberal capitalism and socialism and anarchism. And those are two theories that we really don't want in Japan, right? We want the Kokutai. We want a national harmony, right? So to sum it up, it took me a while, but I realized evolutionary theory was really, if anything, it stood in opposition to the emerging Japanese state ideology.
Okay. You just mentioned Kihira Tadayoshi, right? And one of the things that I really enjoyed about the book was that you also discuss, you talk about thinkers who are not usually included in, let's call it mainstream Japanese thought. So they're not part of, for example, the Kyoto School of Philosophy, or they're not even included in Japanese philosophy textbooks that deal with the Meiji period, for example. And Kihira Tadayoshi is one of them. There's another one, Minakata Komagusu, for example. Personally, I'm also working on Minakata Komagusu, and I think he's a very, very interesting thinker. And I was very surprised to see this in your book, that you also discussed him. And my question is, if you're research is also to a certain extent an attempt to rediscover or reintroduce these thinkers who are not necessarily mainstream thinkers in Japanese thought.
I think that was part of the goal. I think philosophers, I mean, history of philosophy in modern Japan has tended to gravitate towards looking at the, you know, especially the Kyoto School and then later research on Meiji philosophy, but it's essentially coming with a different set of questions, right? Philosophical questions. My book is more attended as a historical, well, a combination of a historical and a philosophical book, but more historical. So if you look at it that way, then a figure like Kihira Tadayoshi, who is you're right, he doesn't appear, as far as I know, he appears very little in English language or even Japanese language research of philosophy in this period, but he was really well known at the time. He published a lot of books. In a way, he also tried to, you know, combine you know, ideas of Buddhism with modern philosophy. He wrote a lot on Hegel and Kant and so on. So he's an interesting figure. I haven't read everything he wrote. I don't intend to. Although I'm personally, you know, maybe he's not a figure that you could be really inspired by, like, for example, in comparison to Nishitaka Kitaro, for example, right? But historically, he's very very important figure, and I think. And so I focused on how he, because he was in this institute called the Kokumin Seishin Bunka Kenkyujo, that kind of functioned in cooperation with the Ministry of Education to subtly exert pressure on the education system, right? So they sent pamphlets to teachers like, don't teach evolutionary theory. And Kira really held a lot of speeches also to denounce evolutionary theory as being wrong and unscientific and so on. So I think it's important to look at a figure like Kihira, that's for sure.
Okay. Thank you very much, Clinton, for doing this. Good luck with all your projects, and hopefully we can talk again soon about your new book or about the special issue of the journal. And for everybody, this was Clinton Goddard, who is the author of Darwin, Dharma, and the Divine, Evolutionary Theory and Religion in Modern Japan, a book that was published in 2017 by the University of Hawaii Press. And as Clinton was saying, buy the book and read it. So thank you very much, Clinton, for doing this.